From Radio Vermont, it's the Dave Graham Show on WDEV. It's your show about the people, places, and the issues that matter the most to you. Now here's your host, Dave Graham.
Good morning, Vermont. It is Tuesday, March the 24th, 2020. And we are continuing our discussions of various aspects of responding to the coronavirus crisis, of course. There really seems to be not that many other stories out there these days. I mean, nothing to match this in its fearsomeness, maybe, is one way to describe it. We're going to be talking this morning with Lola Duffert. She's the education writer for btdigger.org. Very kindly came on the program last week to talk about these unprecedented announcements about Vermont schools closing. And there's some updated information on when they might be reopening, or if anytime soon. And we're going to be catching up with Lola on that in just a couple minutes after I tell you about what's coming later on the show. Second half hour, I think I'm going to open the phone lines. I'm going to have a couple questions for listeners. And one of them is, is anybody out there in agreement or bothered by the president's use of the term China virus or Chinese virus to describe this pandemic? And the second one is, the president was out yesterday with statements about how he basically wants to kind of wake the American economy back up, and thinks that the long-term economic impacts of this shutdown that we are all participating in to varying degrees would be possibly more harmful to the country than this pandemic. Of course, that runs directly counter to a lot of comments we hear from public health experts, who are saying basically the less contact we have right now with our fellow human beings, the better. And that invariably would probably mean less economic activity. Things are pretty tightly shut down right now. We are in a very, very tough economic period for sure. And is the president right that we basically need to all just stand up and face whatever this is and keep going about our business? I mean, that seems to be the direction he wanted to start heading in as of yesterday. So we'll talk about that a little bit in the second half hour of the program. Later on, in the second hour, we're going to be the other day, I should mention, Dan Groberg from Montpelier Alive came on the program and was talking to us about the impacts on Montpelier's small businesses there, you know, along State and Main Streets, Langdon Street, et cetera, and downtown, the what folks can do to sort of help keep our community going to the extent possible. Today we're going to focus on Barrie. We actually had a program planned for quite a while on March 24th, that's today, to talk to Paul Costello of the Vermont Council on Rural Development about a new economic development initiative in Barrie. We were going to pair him with Mayor Lucas Herring, and I'm happy to say that Paul and Lucas will still be with us on the phone this morning. And in addition to them, Tracy Lewis of the Barrie Partnership, which is a local economic development and business promotion group in Barrie, will be joining us as well to discuss. It's definitely a change in focus. They have decided to put on hold the program that the Vermont Council on Rural Development was going to be doing with folks in Barrie, and instead the focus now is on basically similar to what Montpelier is going through. Other of our little commercial centers scattered around the WDEV listening area, we are trying to figure out how to survive, basically, at this point. And so that is going to be the discussion today in the second hour, focused on our great Granite City right here in central Vermont, Barrie. So let's get right into it with Lola Duffert. I believe she's on the phone this morning. She's an education reporter from VT Diggers, doing a great job on that beat. Lola, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And I just wanted to get an update from you. What are the latest orders, directives coming down from the governor or from Education Secretary Dan French affecting our public schools?
Well, the first thing I wanted to touch on that you mentioned was, you know, when are we going to reopen? Mm-hmm. And the original date was after April 6th. That hasn't changed, but, you know, officials have said from the beginning that that is highly likely to be extended. And yep. As much as I never like to predict the future, especially in moments like this, but I would be stunned if we actually reopened after April, you know, immediately after April 6th, just given how the outbreak is going and what the CDC had said about school closures, which is that in order for them to be effective to stem community transmission, you know, you're looking at 2 month closures kind of at a minimum. So I would suggest that people get ready to be homeschooling their kids for at least that length of time, which I know probably sounds extraordinarily daunting.
Well, that sounds like basically the balance of this academic year, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. There is this expectation that Vermont schools will still be expected to keep kids progressing academically through a transition to remote work. And so, you know, school officials are spending a lot of time right now trying to figure out what that could look like. That's, of course, really tricky in a state where entire communities don't have access to internet.
Right.
And, you know, the state is looking into creating Wi-Fi hotspots so that people can drive up and, you know, hunker down in a parking lot and get online. But that's really not an ideal learning environment. So there's a lot of talk about how this transition is going to be really inequitable for certain kids. And that's setting aside the question of special education, which is also, you know, really hard to deliver in a normal environment. It's kind of hard to fathom how that's going to be done successfully in this environment. So those are kind of the two really big thorny questions that school administrators are trying to wrestle to the ground right now. But you're also starting to see like a change in expectations, especially from the federal level. So there was this announcement on Friday afternoon from the U.S. Department of Education that basically said, you know, any state affected by school closures, and by the way, at this point, I think we're looking at least 46 states have closed down their schools entirely. Wow. At least one state has, this was as of yesterday, so that tally mm-hmm. could actually be higher. And Kansas has already said, by the way, we're shut down for the year. But the U.S. Department of Education on Friday said, you know, the standardized tests that we do in the spring, any state that asks to forego those, we're basically going to grant that pro forma. So Vermont over the weekend asked for that waiver and received it. I think they asked on Saturday and received it Sunday.
I saw that in your story yesterday, and I said, my word, that is the fastest government action I've ever seen, on the weekend, no less.
It really is. It really is. So, you know, and that's a signal that, you know, even at the top, people are starting to understand that this is, you know, we're not, the expectations are changing for what's possible in this new time. Obviously, you know, test scores across the country, if tests were administered, would plummet this year because this is not a particularly good learning environment. Even though schools, I have to say, are really trying their hardest to keep kids engaged, keep kids learning, and keep kids feeling a sense of normalcy, which is, I think, really key in what a lot of teachers and administrators are focused on.
My impression is, excuse me, I know a couple of teachers, and my impression is, you know, they're basically working a lot of extra hours right now just to try to keep up with transitioning. You know, they're putting stuff up on YouTube. They are doing a lot of emailing with students at all, you know, all hours of the day. It continues into the evening. They are doing, excuse me, a lot of work that is really geared toward, you know, essentially an attitude of, hey, let's do the best that we can to keep some learning going here.
Yeah, no, they really are. And another really notable thing that schools are doing is, you know, they're trying to keep kids fed. Thousands of kids in Vermont rely on schools, which is, you know, the same as across the United States, rely on schools for regular access to food. So school districts have basically had to put their food service programs on wheels, right? They're bagging thousands or hundreds of lunches and breakfasts a day, putting them on school buses and, you know, delivering them to different meal sites across their districts to try and get food to families who need it. So that's also been, you know, a really big daily effort that schools have had to undertake.
Yeah, I'll tell you, my son is actually enrolled this year in the teacher apprentice program through Champlain College. He's aiming to be a high school Spanish teacher, and he was working at U32, you know, as an apprentice, student teacher there, and of course they're shut down, and he's been out riding the buses around the Central Vermont area in the last few days, handing out meals. So that's what he's been up to.
Yeah.
And wow.
Yeah,
it's Lola. I'm wondering if you are getting any sense from the Agency of Education, for instance, as they talk to teachers and superintendents out there, of you know, specific, I don't know, pedagogical or teaching technique recommendations or requirements or expectations, or, you know, here's what you need to do to be able to tell us in June that the kids got a reasonable dollop of education this year.
I mean, what they have messaged, I've been talking. You know, I talked a lot to superintendents late last week, and I think that that's actually kind of the biggest, one of the biggest areas of anxiety for school officials is, okay, what are the learning expectations this year given this disruption, right? Because right now, what was in the governor's original executive order kind of shutting schools down was, you know, you're going to have remote learning plans in place, you know, if we're looking at an extended closure. And a lot of school officials are saying, okay, yes, we understand the need for that, but how reasonable, you know, what are the benchmarks that we have to hit, and how reasonable is it to expect that to happen? And, you know, how can we penalize kids that are, you know, going to find themselves in, I mean, kids already walk in the door in most public schools, you know, with different levels of preparedness and different supports at home.
Yep.
Some have no support at home. And now they can't go to a place that's going to be able to level the playing field for them, and that's really difficult. So there is I know that that's something that school officials are seeking clarity on, but I think that that's a really big unanswered question. Obviously, I think the state and the rest of the country is hoping and interested in not having to like cancel the year of schooling, but I think we'll have to see how we handle this kind of a little bit later on down the process. And something that we haven't talked about is this other mandate that's been stuck on schools, and this happened midweek last week, which was the request that, you know, schools become kind of emergency child care centers for essential workers.
Now, let me ask you about that, because do I have the correct impression that does not really apply to our high schools? That's more the elementary schools, which are, I mean, because by the time kids are in high school, they're generally regarded as being able to pretty much look after themselves. Is that right? Or
yeah. So the mandate to schools is that any enrolled child, who's 6 years old through 8th grade, is entitled to such care.
Okay.
So yeah, it's not high school students.
Right,
you know, if you're a nurse with an 11th grader, the state is assuming that your 11th grader can hang out alone at home and take care of themselves. but
which is, I mean, you know, in individual cases, that may be, you love the creators, occasionally need a little supervision, like, okay, time to get out of bed and maybe read your book or something, you know?
Right, right. I think we're all sympathetic to that, but that's just not, that's not the priority, I guess, right now.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
And how lazy teenagers can be. But
having been one myself, I mean, both lazy and a teenager at one point, but
yeah.
Go ahead.
But so, you know, that's something that schools are trying to figure out is how they can provide this care. Originally, the governor, when he made this announcement, you know, his executive order included pretty kind of unambiguous language saying, like, you know, you will report to work and provide this care as needed.
Yeah.
And then kind of immediately under pressure from the union, who has a lot of members who are, you know, very concerned for their own health or concerned that they'll spread it if they're, you know, reporting to work in a building with a group of people, immediately kind of backed off from that and said this is essentially voluntary, right? If there are a whole swath of people who are exempted from doing this work, including those over 60, those who are immunocompromised, anyone feeling anxiety about it. So there's a kind of really big open question about whether or not schools are going to be able to meet the full need in terms of childcare, right? You are seeing a lot of schools start to open these sorts of programs. You know, I talked to the principal down in Randolph Elementary last week, who had a program up and running on Thursday, already ready to go for Gifford medical personnel. But, you know, even there, they were kind of triaging requests from parents because there was this acknowledgement that this is, you know, there are a lot more people who are technically entitled to the care than schools are going to actually be able to provide for. So
my guest is Lola Duffert. She is the education reporter for btdigger.org, and our call-in numbers are 244-1777. That's the local number in Waterbury, or 1-877-291-8255, and that is our toll-free number. Listeners, we got a few minutes to go here with Lola Duffert on the line, and if you have any questions or comments for her or me, you're welcome to join the conversation. Lola, I was just wondering if you're have you actually had any conversations with some of the kids, the students who would be normally in school today? How are they feeling? Is there any word for them?
You know, I actually haven't. I've been talking mostly to adults, I don't know how they're feeling. I imagine that they're feeling pretty anxious, and starting, like you and me, to feel a little bit bored.
Well, I'm not bored yet. I'm actually, you know, I mean, my own situation here, and I think you do, we're both still working full time and then some in our jobs, even though remotely. I hear people who are saying, you know, I'm going to go paint a couple of rooms in my house or whatever that I hadn't been getting around to with all this time I suddenly have with my hands. And then I kind of look at the situation and go, what time? But anyway, that's just, I wanted to also just, you know, wonder with you for a moment if there is any sense that this could be a null school year or something. In other words, kids would be some decision down the road. If you were in the seventh grade as of March 1st, 2020, you will be in the seventh grade again as of September 1st, 2020, assuming that we all are back in school next fall.
Again, I think that's unknown at this point. The expectation from the state at this point is that kids will continue to progress academically, and presumably that we, you know, will graduate folks.
Yeah.
And so that's the official word at this point, that this is not going to be a null school year. We'll see, you know, as that progresses.
On the higher ed front, of course, we had a big announcement from the University of Vermont's president, Suresh Garamella, yesterday saying that that the classes would not resume on campus this spring semester. I mean, we kind of were extrapolating a similar kind of surmise onto the public school system here, saying that maybe this will be, you know, there won't be a return to school buildings before the end of this current school year. There won't be a return to buildings on campus at the University of Vermont. And it seems like there's a little bit of, complaint or protest bubbling up from some students there who are saying, you know, are we getting a bit of a raw deal about, you know, two thirds of a year of, or three quarters of a year of education for, and they are talking about small refunds, right?
Yeah, I think they're refunding, Aiden Quigley wrote that story, so I don't know the full details of it. I know that they're refunding, you know, small parts of
the rooms and meals,
rooms and meals, et cetera. Not everything. And obviously that's going to upset a lot of kids. And we saw, you know, this similar conversation happening at college campus closures across the country, you know, where kids were like, okay, A, where do I go now? And B, how much of my money can I get back? Because these are not inexpensive. And you know, at the same time, colleges are going to take an extraordinary hit. And as everyone knows, this was not a sector that was doing well. And Jeb Spaulding, who's the head of the state colleges, you know, was talking to lawmakers yesterday and talking about a multi-million-dollar hit already to the system because of refunds and then just, you know. So that's definitely something that we're going to have to watch later on down the line.
Well, let me stop you for a moment and ask you about the state colleges that, if you heard from Jeb yesterday, I actually just sent him a text this morning to say any announcements following what UVM did yesterday. And I'm wondering, do you know of any similar follow-on plan from the state colleges? Are they shutting down for the remainder of the year?
I mean, everyone's going to shut down for the remainder of the year. I think no one should expect anyone to reopen, after the original deadline. Everything's going to be online for, for the remainder of the year. I think at this point, the open question is whether or not, you know, people reopen in the fall. Spaulding apparently to lawmakers said they expected refunding students' room and board, you know, would cost about $5 million, which is not something the state colleges could afford to do in a good year.
That's a big hit. And UVM's taking a hit, too. I mean, even if some of the students are saying that the refunds, you know, are not completely proportionate with the amount of, missed nights of sleeping in the dorms or something, I guess they that's going to be, I mean, UVM is flusher than the state colleges, but so.
It is much more flush than the state colleges, but yes, I mean, everyone's between a rock and a hard place.
One more question that I wanted to get to you, Lola, which is, I just wonder whether you're hearing any ripple down through all of your sources in the education world. People are kind of wondering what now. From these comments yesterday from President Trump, who is basically starting to make noises about wanting to open things back up and get the American economy back up and revved up and going. And I would assume that if that's the general kind of attitude of getting society going again, I'm just wondering, is there anybody out there saying, huh, or what's the reaction? Are you picking anything up out there?
I'm not seeing folks in the Vermont education world echo Trump's comments. If anything, before the announcement of the school closure, I saw like a chorus of teachers and educators say, let's ignore the federal government. We can't really trust them. And urging, Phil Scott to shut down as quickly as possible.
No, I know the clamor was coming up from the ranks for sure.
It really was. And yeah. So I don't think what the president said is going to hold a lot of sway in the Vermont education world. I think if anything, most people probably heard that and, disregarded it or were, kind of upset about it.
It struck me as really jarring, especially where Governor Scott yesterday was out saying that he might, further kind of batten down the hatches even tighter here in terms of a general shutdown or whatever. So we'll have to see what unfolds. But we're fast approaching the bottom of the hour, which means we're about out of time. Lola Duffert, education writer with vtdigger.org, has been my guest. And Lola, as always, I thank you for joining me. It's great to have your insights and knowledge about this field. It's a very important issue, obviously, in Vermont. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Alrighty, we are fast approaching that bottom of the hour mark, which means we go to some CBS News for a couple of minutes and then a couple of words from our sponsors. Second half hour, I want to open the phone lines. I do have a couple of questions about how the federal government's response may be shifting. Let's get into that in the next half hour. We'll be back, folks.
Lawson's Finest, classic clothing in cutting-edge fashion. Our huge sandwiches and grab-and-go meals, toys, a wide selection of rosé, jewelry, accessories, quarter-pound cookies, and even more beer. Yankee Magazine doesn't call us the best one-stop shopping in Vermont for nothing. The Warren Store. We're funky, friendly, and almost world-famous.
It's the Dave Graham Show on WDEV.
Thanks for staying with us into the second half hour of our program on this Tuesday morning, March the 24th, 2020. And wanted to open the phone lines this next 25 minutes or half hour, whatever we have up to the top of the hour at 10 o'clock, to just invite listeners to and readers. I'm sure you're all reading when you're not listening, trying to keep up with the news and keep up with all of what's going on in this world. It's a crazy place these days. I wanted to focus our discussion, if possible, on a couple things. I mean, if you have any other thoughts, you're always welcome to call in and randomly pitch in here. But and in fact, I missed a call from Ben from Barrie before the bottom of the hour break. Sorry about that, Ben. If you are still out there and listening, you are more than welcome to try again. We'll try to get you on the air in the next few minutes here. But let's see, two questions. One is the president in recent days has been taking to calling the COVID-19 outbreak the China virus or Chinese virus. And he's been taking some criticism over that, with some folks calling that, insensitive and even racist against Asians. I'm wondering what our WDEV listeners think about that. Is that a something the president ought to stay away from? That's question number one. Number two is the president was out yesterday basically saying that he wants to get the American economy rolling again. He thinks that we may have to loosen the physical distancing restrictions and shutdowns and et cetera that have been put in place in the last couple of weeks in really unprecedented fashion in this country, and try to get people back in the streets and in the restaurants and in the bars and in the workplaces and back to sort of normal American life, even if there is this threat of the coronavirus. And and of course, he's getting big pushback from a lot of public health officials and experts who are saying, no, this idea of real shutdown and physical distancing of people is very, very important to this famous mantra of flattening the curve so that we don't overwhelm our healthcare system with just too many patients for our hospitals to accommodate. And so I'm curious to know what people out there think. Should we pretty much keep the U.S. economy in lockdown for some period for next couple of months, probably, maybe longer? Or should we just say it's time to essentially live with a lot more risk, go about our lives and live with a lot more risk? That seems like what it would be. Let's hear what Bill from Barrie has to say about all this. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Dave. Instead of talking about what Trump said. I'd rather give credit to somebody or a group, a large group of people who really deserve credit. They're just like our soldiers, and that is the medical profession. I have an example. It is my son's sister-in-law who lives in West Palm Beach, Florida, and is a registered nurse. She's the head of a floor. You know, she's the top nurse in that floor. And she, at work, even though she's taken her flu shots, got flu and has been home for a while with the flu. That's the first, that's her first Purple Heart, I would call it.
Yeah.
She's over it. I know talking to her husband and my son, she went back to work before they thought she should go back. She's the kind that if you, any of you have seen MASH, the show MASH, we all have, and how they pass the soldier up and send him right back. She's going right back, and she may end up with another Purple Heart. Now, this is something. And, a lot of them are all over the place, the whole country, thousands of people like this, and they are to be commended. And that's what I want to do, not talk about the political part of it.
Well, Bill, I concur with you that all of these people are well worth commending. My wife is a registered nurse, and so I certainly have a personal love for that that profession and for all the people working in our healthcare fields these days. And you know, big changes going on in her work and so on. And I think that's something that you know, so far she's rolling with it all like a trooper. And you know, they're taking steps to minimize risks, but understanding there are risks and basically living with that and going to work willingly and you know, maybe even to some degree cheerfully on a lot of days. And I just think that that is, I agree with you, Bill, that is completely commendable. And you know, hats off to our healthcare workers. Sad to say, I think that their work's going to get tougher in the coming weeks. And you know, this is you know, an early round we're in right now. So let's hope and pray that.
Kudos to your wife. And
well, thank you very much. I'll pass that on. Bill, thanks for the call. I wanted to get back to our questions for this half hour. Chinese virus, fair terms, reasonable, or offensive and racist? What do folks think out there? I'm hearing both interpretations of those utterances by our president. And then this other question where the president was out yesterday basically saying he wants to kick the American economy back into gear. Basically, I guess coronavirus be damned or something. I'm not sure exactly what the, and he's getting big pushback from public health officials who are saying we really need to ratchet it down even more tightly in terms of just people going out and about. Less of that, please, is the way a lot of public health officials are describing the current situation. So I certainly understand the president's motivation and instincts that he looks out across the American economy right now, which is in like deep hibernation, and unemployment numbers are skyrocketing, and you know, we're in a world of hurt right now economically. But the question is, you know, is that the medicine we need to take to beat down this coronavirus? And so I'm just wondering what our listeners think. Do we need to stay the course with, I'm sorry, we have a caller from East Corinth. I missed the name. Forbes, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I think paramount at this given point is the this question of the stimulus package, which is hopefully designed to give some relief here. I can't, in my sense, I can't believe the amount of add-ons to that particular package that are not related to the exact problem that we have, and that is jobs and the survival of business and various other things.
I mean,
what business this solar panel legislation tied into it, or the environmental aspect of an airline with a carbon footprint, and forgiving the Postal Service's debt forever and four or five other things.
A lot of jobs attached to it. And so, I mean, I don't know how you sort of pick and choose among industries that you want to support here. Do you ignore solar and pump up the auto industry? Do you ignore autos and, I don't know, pump up the banking industry? I mean, I'm not sure exactly. And this is the real problem of this legislation moving through this incredibly corrupted Congress that we have, which is essentially that everybody seems to be trying to add on their little pet projects and get their friends some extra cash. And I agree with you, Forbes, that basically, you know, we are in a situation here where we have some very serious problems that need focused solutions. They need and we're applying resources here that which are not infinite. And so we need to be keeping in mind, you know, what's really needed and leaving aside what might be desired by either Democrats or Republicans. I don't think either side has, from what I've been reading about the way the Congress is operating the last week or so, I'm afraid to say that neither side has done itself any glory here. And that's just a shame. I mean, I think, at some point, you would think that in a moment of national crisis like this, that these people could start to actually get their stuff together. Don't you? I mean, am I am I missing here?
I mean, you got to stay focused here. The issues are very clear. You don't have to be a politician or anything else. I mean, the issues are as clear as you'd ever want to see. And that is,
I mean, I guess there are certainly points of emphasis here. I mean, the Democrats are complaining that the Republicans want to put, I don't know, $500 billion into pumping up big business, and they don't want to do much for people who are looking for that $1,200 check to maybe be a $1,400 check or something. And I don't know, you know, whether the proper style of monetary stimulus or whatever. I can sort of understand, you know, how the Democrats and Republicans might debate on some of that stuff. But when I see, you know, Republicans trying to sneak in abortion restrictions or Democrats trying to sneak in, I don't know, some other stuff that this looks like, you know, sort of social do-good kind of attitude legislation or something, I kind of go, let's save that for another day, folks. Come on.
Absolutely. There's plenty of time for that debate, too. But we've got to get the economy. Yep. We've got to get people back to work. We've got to salvage our businesses because they hire. I mean, you can have a desire to work all you want, but if there's no place to work, then it's all futile.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. Forbes, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Always very thoughtful. Check in with us soon. And let's see, I guess the, let's go to Belinda from Plainfield. Good morning, Belinda.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Yeah. I guess there was a power outage before, so the phone,
hung up. Yep, well, thanks for your persistence.
Sure. So I just wanted to say that, of course, I think it's racist. I think it's really unfortunate. It's not surprising that Trump would say that. And I think we have to be really, really careful with our words we use because they have impacts in the real world, as we've seen with, people of Chinese descent being, beat up in the streets. So, those words have an impact. And it's not really surprising coming from Trump. But one thing I do think is interesting, that one of his larger, bigger problems is that he can't just bully and tweet his way out of this mess. This is very serious, and it's not like something we've ever seen before. And so we're all kind of learning as we go. But I think that this could be the ending, undoing, if he doesn't handle this appropriately, which so far he's bungled it completely. But if he doesn't get his shit together and handle this appropriately, then he could, really be in trouble, in the re-election coming up.
Yeah, I was wondering, Belinda, if maybe those who are upset about Trump using this term China virus or Chinese virus or whatever. You know, he some of his actions have been have tended to perhaps exacerbate the problem. I mean, they may, you know, some, his delay in getting serious about this, if it results in more deaths in the United States of America, then to some extent this situation will be blamed on him. And it might be just as fair to call it the Trump virus, right?
Yeah, I've heard some people say that. I've heard that before. Yeah,
I mean,
but I also think we have to come up with some very serious and quick and complex solutions. And I think the person offering the best solutions out there right now is Bernie Sanders, who every day has been holding meetings talking about how this affects the working class and the poor people and the unforgotten people, and in a very thoughtful, articulate way. And I do find it very fascinating that we've all freaked out, including the corporate Democrats as well, about, oh, we can't, you know, single payer health care. Oh, my God. And Nancy Pelosi fighting against Trump, going to the left of her on giving people, you know, a monthly paycheck, a UBI. I don't see any other way around it. And so for me, it's not so much bipartisan. It's not so much a partisan issue as it is like just what are the, I don't care if it's a Democrat or a Republican or a Trump. If it's the right policy, I'm going to support it. And I think that's where we need to be right now. We can't afford to do this bipartisan.
All right. Well, Belinda, thank you for the call. Really appreciate it. Stay in touch with us. Let's see. I think Don from Elmore is on the line. Good morning, Don.
Good morning. As far as Trump calling the virus the China virus, we call the Spanish flu the Spanish flu. And is him calling it the China virus any different than your comment a couple of minutes ago when you referred to our incredibly corrupt Congress? And I broke up because I agree with you, but, you know, where's the difference?
Well, I for one thing, calling something the Spanish flu, that was 100 years ago. I don't know whether, you know, society has grown up and become a little more sensitive since then or not. Maybe not. That could be.
The other
problem with the term Spanish flu is it was just inaccurate. Apparently, the first reported case of that flu pandemic actually occurred in Kansas. So, you know, I mean, it's kind of like... I don't.
Oh, yeah. But people are going to call these things what they want to call them, and that's just the way it is. The people I feel most badly about, other than those that have it, and I have a friend down in Pennsylvania that may have picked it up, and I'm kind of worried about him now because he's elderly. He's 90. Mm-hmm. There you go. But at the same token, the people I feel really badly about are people all over the world in cities living in a small apartment. So help me, if I lived like that and had to be, you know, under quarantine like that, I'd have to pad the walls. At least here, those of us that don't live in a city, if you've got some land or whatever, can get outside and get some fresh air and walk. They don't have to be associated with anybody else or anything. They can just do it on their own.
Yeah.
And
no, you've got a good point there, Don.
A lot healthier way of living.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of us live here, is because there is some space and fresh air. Thank God for that. So
exactly.
Don, thanks for the call. I really appreciate it. Let's see. I'm going to ask my good buddy Dana in the booth there to tell me if Mike from Morrisville is also on the line. Good morning, Mike.
Hi. I'm going to keep this short. I could talk for 2 hours about this subject. But anyway, I didn't think I would agree with you as much as I did with your conversation with Forbes. There is one thing he did leave out. Now, the new Democratic proposal from the speaker has been researched extensively, and they use the word diversity 60 times. They want to tie any money given to anybody for any reason to diversity. What does diversity have to do with solving the COVID-19 problem?
First of all, I would want to really double check my sources on that claim. Secondly, I would imagine that the urge toward inclusion, if in fact they are talking about diversity anywhere in this bill, that you know, there is worry that people with privilege are going to be treated differently from people without much privilege in the response, you know, what kind of, in terms of what kind of healthcare services they're going to get and that sort of thing. So I think there is some there is some legitimate worry there. But I also think, as I said with when I was talking with Forbes, that in terms of taking kind of long term political agenda items and trying to insert them into emergency legislation designed to respond to the coronavirus, I just think that's dirty pool. I think basically,
I agree with you 100%. But this is exactly what the new Democratic proposal is all about. It's all about forwarding the Green New Deal.
I don't know. I'm not. I would have to do some research before I could concur with you on that.
I advise everybody to research it and read it, and then vote accordingly come November. All I got to say, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the call. Let's see here. We are got a little more time for a couple more calls here for 244-1777 and 1-877-291-8255 are our call in numbers. Actually, probably one more call we can squeeze in here before the top of the hour. And I wanted to, you know, just let you know that here on the Dave Graham Show, we're trying to tackle a whole range of different kinds of angles on this story, because obviously it's playing out differently in different people's lives. And certainly there's the healthcare angle. There is a political angle. There's a economic, a huge economic angle. Some of these things overlap on top of each other like a lot. And so, but I urge listeners to write to me, DGRAM at RadioVermont.com. And if you have ideas for topics you would like to see covered on the show here, so think about that. Meanwhile, another caller, someone from Barrie, I missed the name.
Yeah, hi, good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
Spanish flu, Jim. As far as I understand, it was called the Spanish flu because every other country was hiding the fact that they had it. Spain was the first country to come out and admit that there was a problem.
Acknowledge it, yeah. That's what I've heard. I've read that as well. So, Jim, I actually got to go to a top-of-the-hour break here, but I appreciate the call. That's a good point you raised there. The Spanish flu, Spain's honesty maybe is what started with that one. All right, let's go to a top-of-the-hour break here on the Dave Graham Show here on WDEV-FM and AM, a little bit of CBS News. We'll be back on the other side. Folks, stay with us.
There's comfort in the familiar, but when life presents us with something exciting, we just have to embrace it. With so many of our neighbors producing such wonderful products, we just have to show and tell the world. Come in and see for yourself the old standbys alongside the new. Change is good. The one thing that never changes is our commitment to making your visit a great experience. The Warren Store. We're funky, friendly, and almost world famous.
It's the Dave Graham Show on WDEV FM and AM.
We're back, continuing into our second hour on this Tuesday morning, March the 24th, 2020. And we were scheduled to be speaking with somebody from Axios, the online news service. Steph Kite is going to be joining us, I hope, in the next couple of minutes here on the Dave Graham Show. We seem to be having a little trouble establishing contact with Ms. Kite. So I'll take a moment here and talk to you about what's coming up later on this hour. Starting around 10:15 or so, we're going to have a trio of panelists talking to us by telephone. Of course, we're doing all this remotely here, folks. WDEV FM and AM is pretty much on remote mode these days, and thanks to our electronics, it is remotely possible. to do everything pretty much by phone. And today we're on the phone at around 10:15. We're going to be speaking with the mayor of Barrie, Lucas Herring, as well as the head of the Barrie Partnership, Tracy Lewis, and with Paul Costello, the Vermont Council on Rural Development. Paul reached out to me about a month ago and was talking about a program that they're launching. They were going to be launching in Barrie, and I signed him up right around then, along with Mayor Herring, to come on in the next, you know, in this hour of the Dave Graham Show to talk to us about how Vermont Council on Rural Development was going to be helping people in Barrie kind of achieve the next stage of their revitalization, et cetera. And then, of course, we have this little coronavirus come on, and everything changes. So we're going to be speaking with the two of them still, though. How is this playing out or not playing out right now? Maybe it's delayed. I think it is delayed, in fact. Well, but we are also going to be speaking with Tracy Lewis about how Barrie is coping. So we're going to be checking in. Let's see. Do we have our Axios? Okay. We do have a caller from Williamstown in the meantime. Rama, good morning.
Yeah, sorry. I couldn't be from Axios, but I will be briefer, though. You know, people need to look up the phrase punctuated evolution, shorthanded as punk-eek. And it just has to do with how evolution is a thing of steps, and younger folks would be, I can say the phrase, or word binary, where instead of a gentle slope, changes happen as a series of quick steps. And I think we're at one of those punctuated evolution moments for society. Too many people are looking at this as an economic issue, and we're seeing that one of the problems with our economy, out of many problems with the way it exists nowadays, is it doesn't respond well to this sort of crisis. And this will not be the last pandemic. It certainly is not the first pandemic. And, you know, our economy needs to be able to respond to a pandemic in a sensible manner. So we need to look at the changes to make to the economy and rethink this, you know, resist the urge to return to some imagined normal, what we thought we had beforehand.
Rama, I think you are... maybe onto something there. I mean, I sort of wonder, just for instance, our healthcare system, does it need to be ready, you know, to suddenly basically double in size? Is that something that it could do? Is that something that we have everybody talks about in normal times, you know, as like a month ago, that our healthcare system costs are out of control, we need to bend the curve, blah, blah, blah. And now we're wondering, you know, would it be possible to build a healthcare system that you could suddenly balloon up?
So, listen, people smarter than us and more with more expertise in that area than us will come up as we go along to solutions. Now, we may not all see them immediately, but the solutions will get there. But I suspect what you're going to see, you know, we've gone as an economy to more greater and greater specialization. And you're going to see this return to kind of jack of all trades, and not just as people do things, but as when you construct a building, what can it be used for? Is it useful for more than one issue? So I think there's a lot there, but I hear a lot of people saying we've got to get this economy back running the way it should be. The way it should be was not sufficient for today's crisis, so let's do something different.
All right, Rama, thank you for the call. Interesting perspective there. Let's go to Fred in Barrie. Good morning, Fred.
Yes. Yesterday on the news, they're saying all these people in Florida can't find a health care provider, can't find a doctor. I've been in Vermont for a couple of years, and they ain't got no doctor for me. My girlfriend, on her birthday, 11th of February, threw herself to the hospital. They said, you got kidney stones. 3 days later, she was dead at the Berlin Hospital from MRSA in her blood.
Ooh, I'm so sorry.
Diagnosis 100%. I go down and get tested for MRSA at your local, because I have no doctor. They say to me, I had a doctor, but the doctor says I'm still on the waiting list. Are they still paying the doctor to see me, and then she's not seeing me? So I go to the community health care. They get the MRSA test. Comes back positive. They said, oh, you got to do this, and this. I said, I'm homeless. But you have a homeless health care in Burlington, Vermont, the Harbor Place and the Bel Air Hotel, the University of Vermont bought. But we're not going to give you a referral to the hospital or the hotel that they have for the homeless to heal up in. All right? can't find a doctor in Vermont, healthcare. What they're trying to do is put Blue Cross Blue Shield out of business, and all them people come to work for the state of Vermont or the United States government's healthcare organization. It doesn't work. Now, on your next show, all of Main Street and Barrie doesn't have one store. It don't have a men's clothing store and a woman's clothing store, and all it has is nonprofits up and down the street and nobody paying any tax. As far as rural development, that's a completely switch of what you were doing last 10 years. It's taking the rural development and putting it downtown to bring the people downtown. Now it was like Rutland, Vermont. They put a mall out in the outskirts and downtown went dead. You know, there's no stores down there. And now the mall's dead. Only one store around. Walmart. Barrie's the same way. You got one store.
Yeah.
Walmart.
Well, Fred, you're raising a lot of issues here. I don't know whether we're going to be able to focus on any one of them for the length of time it probably deserves, but I appreciate the call. I got to jump, but I thank you so much for checking in with us. We now have on the line with us Steph Kite from Axios. Good morning, Steph.
Good morning.
And I wanted to check in with you to find out how are people responding to these remarks from the president yesterday that he wants to get the economy back up and revving sooner rather than later.
You know, I think there's a lot of mixed responses when it comes to people within the public health sector. What Axios has been hearing is that they're concerned about rushing to stop people from staying home and putting an end to some of these restrictions that a lot of states and cities have been imposing. And you know, for many people, this has been something that they're trying to convince people is a big deal, trying to convince the American public that it is for the best interest to stay home. So there are certainly many public health officials who are a little bit concerned that the president would be considering kind of downplaying this so soon.
Yeah, I'll tell you, one of the effects of this coronavirus might be whiplash, because, I mean, on the same day that the president is talking like that, our governor here in Vermont is saying that, you know, he hasn't called for a sort of a general lockdown yet, as they have in a couple of other states, but he's saying that may be coming in the next couple of days. And so I'm sort of thinking to myself, like, what are we doing here? How are we going to sort this out?
Yeah, I think that confusion is definitely real for a lot of people. And one thing to keep in mind is that even though President Trump is considering encouraging people to go back to work relatively soon, most of the actions that we've seen to prevent the spread of coronavirus have come from local and state officials who are looking out for their particular population. Because as we see this coronavirus spreading, it's starting in specific areas, in specific cities. Right now we're seeing, obviously, New York City is where a lot of the focus is, but it wasn't, and Washington State had lots of issues before that. And so this is going to be a locality by locality, state by state issue, and we're going to continue to see state officials issue guidance based on what's best for their communities. But it does certainly complicate things when the President of the United States starts saying, no, it's okay to go back to work. I definitely think that'll be confusing for some people and could put pressure on Republican governors and Republican state and local officials to maybe consider what Trump is saying versus what they need to do for their own communities based on how the virus is spreading there.
Well, that could raise an interesting, I hope we don't end up dividing up into a red and blue country on the coronavirus. I mean, of all the crazy outcomes you could have here, if there is a, you know, sort of a strategy that seems to work with beating back the coronavirus, one would hope that everybody would adopt that strategy. No?
Yeah, you certainly would hope so. And, you know, even from my own reporting, looking at some polls, there has already been a little bit of a divide on the way Republicans and Democrats are responding to the virus. Of course, mm-hmm. The virus is going to impact everyone, no matter what political party you're associated with or what you're, where you live or who you are. This is impacting everyone in different ways. But we have already begun to see Democrats being more likely to say that they've taken some of these precautions that have been recommended, these social distancing precautions, than Republicans. Republicans are also more likely to say that they don't believe the media and believe the media is overhyping the danger of the coronavirus. And so because of these initial differences we've seen in the beginning, because of President Trump's different responses at different times to the severity about the severity of the virus, I think there is a lot of confusion, and we are starting to see some differences between Republicans and Democrats in the way that they're responding. But as it continues to grow, I think we can expect to see those changes lessen, unless, as we're talking about, President Trump does kind of differ from most public health experts.
Well, one last question for you, which is, what about the Congress? Are they going to get their acts together, or is this kind of a hopeless situation in terms of this relief package?
You know, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Congress to get something done. And obviously, they've really not been able to come to an agreement so far, arguing over what the best way is to really help Americans and companies and industries that have been impacted by just having to shut down in response to this coronavirus. So we know that conversations are ongoing, and there's going to be a lot of pressure as we continue to see the death rate rise and we continue to see businesses shut down. Something's going to have to be done, but I think the devil's in the details on this.
Yeah. All right. Well, Steph Kite of Axios, it's always good talking with you. Let's stay in touch and continue to follow this. It's really an unbelievable story. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Wanted to turn our spotlight onto the city of Barrie right now and look at what's going on in that central Vermont city. Obviously, we are very concerned about businesses throughout the WDEV listening area and everywhere, really, in the United States and Vermont. But our local businesses here are really reeling right now, trying to figure out how they can continue in what they do in this age of the coronavirus, and whether they are going to be able to recover when all of this crisis is abated. And we have had a couple shows over my couple of years doing this program now, kind of focusing on the city of Barrie. Obviously, it's an important commercial center within the context of the WDEV listening area, and I personally love Barrie. I think, you know, all the history there and the stone carving and that old tradition there is beyond cool. And so about a month ago or so, Paul Costello from the Vermont Council on Rural Development called me up and said, "Hey, Dave, we are launching one of our programs." VCRD is actually a terrific statewide organization that helps local communities kind of focus themselves and figure out ways to enhance their sense of community and economic development. At the same time, he said to me that we're starting a new program in Barrie, and we talked about getting him, Paul Costello, that is, and the mayor of Barrie, Lucas Herring, on the program to talk about what they were planning. And then in the interim between that initial planning for today's radio show and today, of course, the coronavirus came up, and the new VCRD program in Barrie was put on hold. And then we sort of talked about it and said, you know, let's go ahead and talk about this anyway, because VCRD obviously deserves some attention, and we ought to just talk about what was planned and still planned at some point in the future when, as I say, when this crisis is faded, folks will be getting back to work on their projects, and this idea of VCRD working with the city of Barrie would be one of them. And the other thing that happened in the interim is that we got a third person involved in this conversation, who is Tracy Lewis from the Barrie Partnership. She is really focused on the here and now right now, of trying to talk with businesses in Barrie about how they navigate the current crisis. And all of this fits together. We're going to have some discussion, I think, of near-term economic survival in a place like Barrie, and then longer term planning for the future of how folks in Barrie want the community to look in 20, 30, 40, 50 years. So all of that is a long-winded way of saying that I have three guests on the line right now, and they are Paul Harrington of the Vermont Council on Rural Development, Tracy Lewis of the Barrie Partnership, and Lucas Herring, the mayor of Barrie. And I thank the three of you very much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having us, Dave.
Hi, good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Let me start with Tracy, if I could, and ask you, Tracy, you obviously, as I said, are dealing with the here and now, and what are you doing with local businesses in Barrie to kind of help them either swap information or get information out to the public and that sort of thing?
I am doing daily updates right now, posting them on our Facebook page, and I'm going to try to get it on our website as well, but it's out with the, I sent it to the Times, Argus, and the World as well. So I'm doing kind of a daily update as things change, because things are changing so drastically, and from day to day, there's quite a few changes.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, have you seen any businesses in the city, I don't know, reversing an earlier plan to curtail hours, as in, you know, re-expanding hours, or anybody out there who's saying, you know, we're staying open come the heck or high water, or what are any sort of, I don't know, uptick like that yet, or is it still all in shutdown mode?
There are some businesses that are still open as usual. You know, this is their livelihood, and they're doing what they can right now to stay open. They're offering curbside delivery as well as delivery. And then the ones that have wanted to stay open, you know, they're shutting down their showroom, but they're still there taking phone calls, taking orders, and bringing things out to the curb to facilitate things.
What are you hearing from these businesses? I mean, I'm thinking now of like a Nelson Hardware, you know, a place I shop from time to time, and you know, are they seeing they must be seeing a major downturn in traffic, right?
I was actually at Nelson's this morning. They are working on reduced hours right now. But with my talk, she said that a lot of people are doing a lot of projects at home right now. So I'm thinking that they haven't really seen much of a decline because everybody is home. So
that's actually interesting. I mean, and that's fascinating when you think about all the different impacts of this new style of living, I guess, we're all experiencing right now. Sure. I mean, if people are out of work at home, and you know, you look around the house and you go, "There's that, you know, there's that room I've been meaning to paint. What am I going to do today?" Well, heck, let's go down to the hardware store and get some paint, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've done that myself. So,
yeah, that is interesting, and I suspect that's. That's sort of the kind of normal human resilience you see in a crisis like this, where people are saying, let's, you know, find some kind of silver lining. Let's figure out what are the advantages we can take, if any, from the current situation, and sure, why not? So I'm happy to hear that, actually, you know, our good friends at Nelson Hardware, if they are able to continue along at pretty much their normal pace, then kudos to them, and good luck. And I hope it remains, and that everybody stays well in the process. So that's a great thing. And in terms of Tracy, I should ask you too, were you involved in the discussions about the work of the Vermont Council on Rural Development with the City of Barrie?
Yes, I did go to the meeting where it was all discussed, and I was going to help with the communication of getting the word out about the event.
Yeah, yeah. And we got to go to a bottom of the hour break in just a couple minutes, but I want to ask Paul to give us a sort of a preview of what we're going to talk about after the break of what was it that you had planned for the City of Barrie?
Well, thanks so much, Dave. It's great to be here. And, you know, I know how much you care about Barrie. We love Barrie, too. We don't come in with a plan when we do this process. We come in with a structure. And so the meeting that Tracy described just for a second there was a steering committee where we brought together about 25 people, including the mayor and Steve McKenzie, Tracy, Bob Nelson, and people representing the demographics and vocations of the community, to kind of say, what are the issues that we would start with? And then we basically build a like a tic-tac-toe board of forums that we're going to be on April 7th. and that include everything from the future of transportation to aging and supporting people who are getting older, supporting various students, recreation, arts, and culture, addressing empty buildings and downtown vitality, homelessness and housing development. So it was a, you know, a great sort of session to sort of think, well, what are the different categories of conversation as we think about the big picture of the future? And we go out after that and say, who are the top folks in Vermont with expertise, ability to provide technical assistance, and maybe funders? So we had three secretaries, the heads of each congressional office geared up to come. We were going to invite the governor for dinner on this day, sort of to kick off this 3 or 4 month long process to get everyone's cards on the table, get everyone's big ideas on the table, and then over the course of a couple months, sort those ideas, identify key priorities for action that really aren't about, you know, voted decisions of the town itself or the city itself.
Tell you what,
let's
let's talk about it more after the break. This sounds really, really like a fascinating process or structure, as you put it, Paul. So I do want to dig in more, but we need to go to some CBS News at the bottom of the hour here on the Dave Graham Show on WDEV FM and AM. A couple words from our sponsors and more with my guests, Mayor Lucas Herring and Tracy Lewis of the Barry Partnership, and Paul Costello, the Vermont Council on Rural Development. Stay with us, folks.
Lawson's Finest, classic clothing in cutting-edge fashion. Our huge sandwiches and grab-and-go meals, toys, a wide selection of rosé, jewelry, accessories, quarter-pound cookies, and even more beer. Yankee Magazine doesn't call us the best one-stop shopping in Vermont for nothing. The Warren Store. We're funky, friendly, and almost world famous.
Now back to the Dave Graham Show on WDEV FM and AM.
My guests are the Mayor of Barry, Lucas Herring, Tracy Lewis of the Barry Partnership, Paul Costello of the Vermont Council on Rural Development, and we are talking about what's now a canceled program that had been set for April 7th in Barry to bring in the VCRD, I'm sorry, get my acronyms correct, have them talk to the folks in Barry about a wide range of approaches to enhancing and developing Barry for the future. And the April 7th gathering canceled now, of course, because of the coronavirus crisis, but Barry, of course, like our other communities in Central Vermont, dealing with a lot of issues. Can its economy survive the coronavirus crisis? And Paul, you were telling us before the break a little bit about the sort of structure of the program that that your group brings in. And this is something you've done in quite a number of other Vermont communities, correct?
We've actually done this. Altogether, it's a six-month process. We've done it now in about 75 towns and cities throughout Vermont, from Rutland to Bennington and Pownall, all the way up to border towns in the Northeast Kingdom. We don't think we know what's good for people, but we do think that democracy is alive and well in rural communities. And when people line up together and set objectives and connect to resources and advice and potential funding, they can do incredible things. And we see it throughout the state. You know, you were talking a little earlier about silver linings, and I first say I don't think it's canceled. I think it's postponed. I think we're going to get through this. I think that part of the silver lining in all this is this deep sense of attention to each other, compassion, mutual support, that we see in crisis what's most important to us. So I think we are Vermont strong. I think we're going to come through this. We're going to take some knocks, and it's going to be tough. And it's tough in terms of the pandemic, but also it's going to be economically tough. But we've been through things like this in our history, and we stand together. And maybe that's a silver lining, is it reminds us who we are, and it reminds us who we care for. And so I'm excited about that. And we are actually, as an organization, we've canceled where we've postponed with Barry. We've also been putting off with Mendon. we've got Milton, Bradford, Barton in the queue, and you know, everything's going to be knocked back for us as an organization. But we're turning a corner to say, look at all the work that's happening community to community with people trying to figure out how they can help those who need meals, those who need some social interaction or connection in their home, people who are shut-ins, people who may need some financial support. And in towns throughout the state of Vermont, people are lining up to say, you know, we're going to need to increase local volunteerism, even if it's digital volunteerism, to support those people. So we're looking at how we can help and support those folks right now. We haven't sort of sat on our hands as an organization, or, you know, there's a tendency or, the fearfulness of the situation and the underlying kind of sadness of the situation can be paralyzing. But it's really important to say, no, I'm going to reach out to other people. I'm going to do what's within our power. And so on our end, we're very much doing that today.
That's a really good way of describing the situation. I think that that we could get into a period when a lot of people are feeling a little bit of a tug of despair or depression or that kind of thing. And I've always heard from people who work with, people who are battling with depression, that one great way to address that in many cases, I don't suspect it works in all cases, but in many cases is to have the person who is experiencing this really focus on reaching out and helping others in the moment. And a lot of times that takes the focus off the self and the problems of the self, and really generates a whole new upward spiral of energy, and that could be so. I hear what you're saying. This sort of mass feeling right now, anxiety anyway, some depression, I guess, and folks feeling really sort of helpless. We are not helpless when we're helping each other, right?
That's right. Yep. Common purpose.
Lucas Herring, the mayor of Barrie, I want to get you in on the conversation here, and I really appreciate you joining the program this morning. And Mayor, tell us a little bit about, I don't know, what it feels like for leader of a local community when Paul and his group come to you and say, let's talk, let's do one of our programs here. What is that like from your end?
So we worked with Paul before too. We have the free Wi-Fi in our downtown, and that was a project that we worked on several years ago when I was still a counselor. And mm-hmm. it's great working with them. But in general, it was a great opportunity that we saw to where we could partner and try to bring in members of the community to actually have a voice in what was going to happen in the future. So I think Paul had mentioned that this is not canceled, this is postponed. And we still do look forward to the opportunity to have them come in as part of this program.
The having the Vermont Council on Rural Development come into Barrie, and as Paul says, the program that was scheduled for April 7th has been postponed. We don't have a firm date yet, obviously, because we don't know when this whole coronavirus thing is going to go away, correct?
Correct. I mean, it's going to take some time to understand new initiatives that come down from either the governor's office or federally to address whatever issues that are coming up. Now, you know, we have the directives where we've been decreasing the social connectedness as much as possible, just so that we don't transfer the virus currently. And as you probably see, if you go to the Vermont Department of Health's website, the number of cases is increasing. So we just want to make sure that we get through all of this together first, and then we'll worry about the actual date at a future time.
Yeah, that is entirely understandable. And we were saying, talking with Tracy Lewis from the Barrie Partnership, the immediate nature of the new situation, obviously, I think April 7th was going to be focused in a big way on the future. We got to talk about today and tomorrow. And so, Tracy, your sense of any good examples of kind of business to business help, people advising each other and helping hold each other up going on in Barrie these days?
I know that a lot of businesses are going out, and with the restaurants that are open, they're ordering lunch every day. Some businesses are buying gift cards to hand out to their own customers for the restaurants. And then I know the Vermont Quick Lube in South Ferry was giving out free car washes if you brought in two receipts from local stores. So they're all really rallying together to help out each other, which is great. So, you know, we have to focus on the positivity and working together and staying strong. And that's really what we've done, which is great.
And the, what do you know about how are the young folks doing? They're not in school right now. Let me ask Lucas Herring, the mayor, what are you hearing from your school officials and what are you seeing around town and so on?
So, you know, they did close school and the building was still open for a while, but I believe even today they're working at closing down the building entirely. So all the staff are to be working from home. And again, it's just another effort so that people are at home, they're safer. Some of the concerns are how is instruction going to be performed? Not everybody has internet connection, for example. So there are programs out there. If you try to contact Charter Communications, they are having an option for up to 60 days of free internet if you have a child who needs to have educational learning in the home. So think of your college kid that might be back now because they are told that they can't be on campus anymore. You can have that wireless connection at your home so that they can still do online learning. And, you know, it does create a different dynamic at home. You have some parents that are working from home now. You have kids that are home during the day, which they weren't before. So there's a lot more, the residual effects aren't always that bad. You know, sometimes it's more, you're getting to know your family a little bit more. You're spending more quality time with them as well.
You know who's really liking it in our household are our two dogs.
I'm sure. They get all the
attention. They're liking having people around, I think. You know, that's the impression I get anyway. I haven't asked them directly, but they seem happier and it's a jolly scene having the dogs for sure. Anyway, Paul Costello, I'm wondering if you are hearing from other local officials around Vermont. You know, you must have a sense sort of statewide of the, and I'm just wondering if you have any sort of favorite stories that are bubbling up so far about that neighbor-to-neighbor help you were talking about.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty remarkable. There's some people who are really good leaders in communities who may not work for the municipality, may lead local community efforts, and everywhere we look, people are kind of shifting gears to say, you know, we were working on developing a youth center in Rockingham, or we were looking at redeveloping a particular building in this town. You know, the timing isn't right. Let's turn a corner and see what we can do in the face of the emergency. And also knowing that, as we're hearing in Barrie, you know, there's going to be an economic recovery and in there will be opportunities for creativity, but it's going to be tough. And so a lot of people are having those discussions in communities, and they're basically, you know, having virtual digital tabletop kind of conversations. Everybody's using Zoom, so we've been helping some people use Zoom. And towns like up in the Kingdom, we heard of one town where they've identified people who they believe are at risk from an economic point of view or a health point of view, and they're building connections with them through the internet and through the phone to do regular check-ins. And the list is like 150 people, and they're calling them regular. I'd rather not say the names of the towns because it's a little because they're kind of quietly doing this. Other towns are looking at the potential to deliver meals, and you know, there's like this. After Irene, there was this interstitial kind of fabric of work that community members did. One of the things that we were doing at that time was a digital economy project. We brought Front Porch Forum to every town in the state. We helped set up Wi-Fi zones in 40 different towns. We helped build municipal websites and, you know, just a lot of different work to support nonprofits and small businesses. And in the middle of that, you looked at how Moortown responded to Irene, where
you know, the Office of Emergency Management and Public Services from the state of Vermont would come in, and they'd see all these volunteers who were coordinated. They'd see people lending each other chainsaws or sump pumps, and they'd see people offering a room in their house overnight up on the hill for people downtown. And it was invisible to them. And it turned out it was happening on Front Porch Forum, and it was happening on Facebook chat sites. And local people had just sort of built this digital infrastructure that was entirely separate from the Office of Emergency Management and the people who were coming in to try to coordinate recovery. So one of the things we did at that point was we brought in IBM, who consulted in the middle of this process and helped frame digital tools to connect the local in an emergency, the local emergency response that was happening in a very quiet way, an invisible way, with the statewide folks who had a lot of expertise and leadership. And in the current situation, we're seeing all these groups like that are trying to do these different things, but they may not have protocols. They may not have direct connection to state, federal officials, partly because of the structure of our board, and also because we do so many community visits and work like this, where we bring teams of people from state, federal, nonprofit, and philanthropy to town. We get to know all those different people. And so we're trying to be a hub that helps encourage and support local volunteerism, but also ensure that it's connected to the other resources so we don't get multiplicity or people working, you know, without intention at cross purposes. And it's a lot of work, and we're just trying to figure it out. But already there's a lot of groups in the state that are kind of pulling together to stay connected.
Your talk of connections and actual building out of communications networks and so on bring to mind a discussion I've been hearing in recent days, particularly around educational programs now, where there's talk of trying to do some distance learning where that's applicable and possible and so on in Vermont. But of course, the downside there is that there are many parts of the state which do not have the same high speed internet access that most of the population centers have these days. And do you think that this crisis might result finally in a real concerted effort to say everybody's got to have that?
Boy, it does feel like an obvious imperative. It's been one that we've understood from a policy level for a long time. And each, you know, remember Jim Douglas set a goal for universal broadband service. Peter Shumlin did too. And with great intention. And we've had an incredible work to expand broadband coverage and real leadership from our congressional delegation, especially Senator Leahy, who helped bring significant resources to Vermont. And so the challenge has been, you know, the cost of doing it and the coordination with private sector businesses that don't make as much money in rural deployment as they do in an urban setting. I do think that this is going to make that more imperative. The legislature's taken it seriously the last couple of years, but there isn't a single silver bullet solution out there yet. So I suspect it's going to come back up, maybe not today, but in the next couple of years as a fundamental long-term infrastructure need for every household. One of the challenges is that, as you're describing, it's the people who are often most vulnerable. They're older and they're not used to digital technology, or they have less resources, and so for them to pay $50 a month for a connection is hard to justify, or it may not be possible. And so those are two sort of fundamental challenges that we need to think about. And I agree, Dave. I think there'll be a lot more discussion of it.
Yeah, I mean, it may come to pass that people will just start to view something like broadband internet access as being as necessary as a public school. And if you go to any rural town in Vermont, basically the state has laws that say, I don't care how far out the dirt road you live or your kids are, we're going to send a bus to get them and bring them to school. And that's just something that society has built itself up to build, to provide. And so we do have, you know, this 100% education coverage, you might call it. We don't have yet 100% broadband coverage, but if the two come to be seen as, mutually connected or whatever, then maybe that will be will change the thinking and be the result. I don't know, but it's just a thought. I mean, it's kind of randomly popped into my head. Let me ask Lucas Herring. You mentioned actually this one of the things that got me onto this broadband spiel is your discussion, Mr. Mayor, of the push to get free Wi-Fi in downtown Barrie, and how has that worked out in terms of being an economic development tool? Is that something you brag about when people talk about opening a business downtown or whatever?
Well, having it provided is actually a partnership with the businesses in the downtown. So it's mm-hmm. created basically with a mesh network, which means each one of those businesses in the downtown that has internet internally, they share some of that signal strength externally so that on Main Street, as you walk up and down the street, you could access it for free if you wanted to. As an economic development tool, it was something that we launched. It must have been at least 5 years ago. And some people know about it and they use it regularly. There's a Meraki. It's the tool, an online tool where you can go and actually see reports. It's actually managed by the Barrie Partnership now. So they would have more detail on that. But being able to have connection, speaking of which, the Vermont Department of Public Safety has a website set up now where individuals can go and check where there is free Wi-Fi to connect to. Not just for school purposes, but there's a lot of need for connectivity to stay up to date on what's currently happening. And if you're at home and you do not have connectivity, at least it gives you an ability to drive your car to a location. You don't even have to step out of your vehicle, but it allows you to connect to be able to search those websites, get updated information, and be informed on what's happening.
That is at the Department of Public Safety?
Yes. Yeah. So if you go onto their website, there is a link that is specifically for a map, and it shows all the different locations where Wi-Fi is available.
Wow, that is interesting. I did not know that, and that's something which I would think that a lot of people are who may not have had Wi-Fi connectivity as part of their normal life because they live out in some rural part of Vermont where such a thing just isn't available, and so you adapt to the kind of the technological availability around you. It seems as though logically that people are really thirsty for information about, you know, what's going to be open, what's going to be closed, what are the latest orders and requests from state government, and so on and so forth. And here's a way to stay up to date, which you know, may not be as easy for some people as just walking into your kitchen and firing up the laptop, but there's at least a way to make this work, and so that's what it's about. It's about just taking whatever practical steps out there are available and making the most of them, because heaven knows we need all the help we can get it right now. And if that's coming from one another, and that helps build community over the long term and remind us of some of the fundamental values about compassion and goodness to our neighbors, then all the better. And that's great stuff. My guests are Lucas Herring, the mayor of Barrie, Tracy Lewis, the director of the Barrie Partnership, a local business development group there, and Paul Costello is executive director of the Vermont Council on Rural Development, and the three of you are really all bringing thoughtful perspectives to this discussion today, and I really appreciate your participation. I think we got time for one or two more calls from listeners out there. 244-1777 is the local number in Waterbury, the toll-free number 291-8255. Yeah, I had a little brain cramp there for a moment, folks. I've only uttered that toll-free number probably 4,000 times in the course of hosting the Dave Graham Show here on WDEV FM and AM for the past couple of years, and it's always a challenge to remember the darn phone number you're supposed to call so you can talk to the program here. Anyway, that's the deal here. And we have an opportunity here for listeners to weigh in. What do you think will be the other side in terms of the future of Barrie? Are you hopeful? Are you worried? Are you thinking that we're going to see some fundamental changes as a result of some lessons learned from this crisis? Are there changes in the way society operates? I don't know. One question I asked earlier. Let's go to someone from Greensboro. I missed the name. David from Greensboro. Good morning.
Good morning. I think it's important to be reminded that we need physical defenses for this virus. And since we're not going to have an antivirus targeting this one for a long time, we need a respirator mask that will filter the virus. One of my neighbors and two of her friends are making masks for nearby hospitals. I just talked with her this morning. Our rescue squad and our nursing home. So your listeners should call or go to their nearest hospital for masks that will filter the virus. That's all I have.
All right. Well, thank you, David. That is an interesting piece of advice there. I guess there are a lot of people out there who are making masks. I'm going to put this on my list of topics to look into because I'm kind of curious. I wonder, you know, are these masks really working? Are they efficacious, I think is the term you hear some healthcare people talk about. I mean, will this mask actually, if you go around with this mask, are you better protected against the virus or not? That's questions maybe for a later edition of the Dave Graham Show. Speaking of which, we are about out of time for this edition. I want to thank my guests, Lucas Herring, the mayor of Barrie, Tracy Lewis, the director of the Barrie Partnership, Paul Costello, the Vermont Council on Rural Development. Thank the three of you very much for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Dave.
And that's about it for today's edition of the Dave Graham Show. Don't forget about our podcast, folks. Go to WDEVradio.com. Follow the link to the Dave Graham Show. Scroll down a bit, and you will come up with a list of our recent programs by topic and guests and be able to listen to your heart's content any time of day or night. And you can always catch us live, too, from 9 to 11 weekdays. And stay tuned now for Bill Sayre, Common Sense Radio, and stay with WDEV for all the latest news and talk updates on the coronavirus crisis. We'll talk to you all tomorrow, folks. Have a good day.